Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
My warm welcome to all of on this historic day in which the Paris Agreement on Climate Change, adopted on 12 December 2015, is opened for signature.
That's UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon opening today's ceremony on the signing of the International Climate Agreement. Details next. Also, today is Earth Day, a day to raise awareness about environmental issues affecting the planet. And police reported that a Burundi army colonel was killed on the streets of the capital. We'll have these stories and more coming up ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour: last December in Paris, nations finally agreed on a deal to address climate change. Today in New York, they have begun signing it. The agreement calls for limiting the rise in global temperatures. Also, nations must set their own targets to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And the deal calls on wealthy nations to help poor countries adapt to climate change. Beginning today, nations have 1 year to sign the agreement. It becomes law 30 days after 55 countries have ratified it. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon opened today's signing ceremony.
Excellencies, distinguished heads of state and government, honorable ministers, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, we are breaking records in this chamber. And that is good news. But records are also being broken outside. Record global temperatures, record ice roads, record carbon levels in the atmosphere. We are in a race against time. I urge all countries to move quickly to join the agreement at the national level so that the Paris Agreement can enter into force as early as possible.
Mr. Ban says the window to limit the rise in global temperatures is rapidly closing. He says the era of consumption without consequences is over.
Let us never forget, climate action is not a burden. Indeed, it offers many benefits. It can help us eradicate poverty, create green jobs, defeat hunger, prevent instability, and improve the lives of girls and women. Climate action is essential to achieve the sustainable development goals.
Today's youth will be the most affected by the climate agreement, whether or not nations follow through on their commitments. Representing the world's youth at the signing ceremony was 16-year-old Gertrude Clement of Mwanza, Tanzania.
Climate change poses big problem for the entire planet, but children, especially the poorest and most vulnerable, will feel most of its effects now and in the future. Climate change threatens our life, our earth, as well as our education. You might think that we are too young to know about the risk and the reality of climate change, but we see in our daily lives. As young people, the future is ours. But this is not the future we want for ourselves. We are not just sitting by watching our communities suffer. We're leading our communities in taking action, standing up and speaking up about the issues we see in our communities.
Clement says she and other young reporters saw firsthand the effects of climate change on youth.
I'm a young girl standing before you today, but I'm not alone. We expect more than words on paper and promises. We expect action. Action on a big scale. And I expect action today, not tomorrow. I expect to return in Tanzania and tell my fellow that the future is ours. And the future is bright.
That was 16-year-old Gertrude Clement of Tanzania. Also addressing the climate agreement signing ceremony was Joseph Kabila, president of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Mr. Kabila represented the 48 least developed countries, which he says played a significant role in reaching the agreement.
Today's declarations of ambitious actions from the world leaders will send a strong signal that time has come to turn aspirations into concrete actions. Today is an opportunity to outline our timetable for ensuring the agreement will have full force in international law and that it will be implemented. In this regard, ministers from the least developed countries met in Kinshasa early this month to reiterate their commitments to the Paris Agreement. They declared that their governments will take all necessary steps required for the ratification of the Paris Agreement as soon as possible.
DRC President Joseph Kabila. Secretary of State John Kerry represented the United States at the signing ceremony.
So for certain, today is a day to mark and to celebrate the hard work done by so many to win the battle of securing the Paris Agreement. But knowing what we know, this is also a day to recommit ourselves to actually win this war. Paris was a turning point in the fight against climate change. Paris marked the moment when the world finally decided to heed the ever-rising mountain of evidence that had been piling up for years. It marked the moment that we put to rest once and for all the debate over whether climate change is real and began instead to galvanize our focus on how, as a global community, we are going to address the irrefutable reality that nature is changing at an increasingly rapid pace due to our own choices.
Kerry described what he called the power of the agreement.
The power of this agreement is the opportunity that it creates. The power is the message that it sends to the marketplace. It is the unmistakable signal that innovation, entrepreneurial activity, the allocation of capital, the decisions that governments make, all of this is what we now know definitively is what is going to define the new energy future. A future that is already being defined, but even yet to be discovered. The power of this agreement is what it is going to do to unleash the private sector, and it is already doing to set in pace the global economy on a new path for smart, responsible, sustainable development.
Secretary of State John Kerry speaking today at the United Nations, where signing has begun for the Paris Climate Agreement. Today is Earth Day, a day to raise awareness about environmental issues affecting the planet. It's a commemoration that began in 1970. The theme this year is Trees for the Earth. Organizers say their goals are to plant nearly 8 billion trees, divest from fossil fuels, make cities operate on renewable energy, and take the momentum from the Paris Climate Summit and build on it. Scientists say climate change is caused by the trapping of heat in the atmosphere, largely due to the burning of fossil fuels. The rising global temperatures are in turn causing sea levels to rise as polar ice caps and glaciers melt. That's threatening some of the UN World Heritage Sites. VOA's Adam Phillips looks at these climate trends and what's being done to help offset them.
A warming world means that sea levels are rising. That's because water expands when it heats up, and the vast ice sheets on Antarctica and Greenland melt and flow into the oceans. Adam Markham is Deputy Director of the Climate and Energy Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. He says rising sea levels cause increased flooding for cities on or near the coasts where most people live. And the storm surges that result from increasingly frequent superstorms and other extreme weather events make severe floods extremely likely.
When you have a storm surge on top of a high tide, that can be maybe 3 to 5 meters higher than normal water levels. So it's really the storm surge on top of high tide that is the real danger time.
It sounds really scary.
Yeah, climate change and sea level rise, which is the main impact we sort of talk about, is really scary, and I think it's getting scarier by the day.
Over the long term, higher sea levels threaten the very existence of many of the world's cities. Over the shorter term, they can also damage or destroy important cultural and heritage sites, both in and near cities and in remote areas. Some disasters have already occurred at these sites. In the U.S., for example, Superstorm Sandy severely damaged the island where the Statue of Liberty stands in New York Harbor. It forced a years-long shutdown and required $100 million in infrastructure repair. And Markham says that Jamestown Island in Virginia, the first British colonial settlement in America, is not more than a meter above sea level.
And probably within 50 years, most of Jamestown Island will have completely disappeared.
World sea level rise is of intense concern to Mechthild Rösler, director of UNESCO's World Heritage Center in Paris. It oversees and helps protect or repair 1,031 World Heritage Sites.
They have estimated that the rising sea level due to climate change could drown a fifth of all cultural World Heritage Sites during the next 100 years. So this is something which is really dramatic. I think it would be terrible for us all to lose any of those unique sites because they are so important for our history to understand where we come from and where we go to. And it's really something which is very deep inside of all of us.
Africa has 131 World Heritage Sites all its own, says Lisa Ackerman of the World Monuments Fund, which helps restore and preserve many of them.
Africa is a continent that would never cease to provide new wonders for travelers. One could find extraordinary places, whether it's Robben Island, where Nelson Mandela was held, off the coast of South Africa, is a place because it's an island, is obviously affected by rising sea levels. There are other places like Cape Coast in Ghana, another fortification on the water affected by rising sea levels.
Ackerman adds that many of Africa's cultural and historic sites are threatened by lack of water due to human-caused climate change, not too much water. The result is drought or the creeping growth of the desert. That may spell doom for Mauritania's Shengeti Mosque. It's a great medieval center of Islamic learning that sits on a landscape that has become so dry it can no longer grow food.
And it's a building that over time may indeed be lost when there's no community there to sustain it.
Sometimes there is enough water to drink, but not enough to make mud for the bricks needed to maintain and repair earthen buildings. That's what happened in the Aru Temple in Mali's Bandiagara escarpment. It's a vast, remote collection of hundreds of villages which has been continually occupied since the 3rd century. The Aru Temple is one of the community's unique religious centers.
It was a historic mud brick temple that had been used by the community for more than a century. And lack of water made it impossible to make new mud bricks to repair the building for an extended period of time. Ultimately, when the building couldn't be used safely, the fetish that made it a religious site had to be removed. And once it was possible to repair the building, the fetish was returned, ceremonies were performed to return the temple to the community, and it was a very, very important moment.
It's an Earth Day truism that human beings, other life forms, and the landscape, both natural and built, form a seamless web. Some scientists are optimistic that climate change can be slowed to manageable levels and adapted to, if not reversed. What's needed, they say, is political and popular will and education, coupled with the demand that the love for life and the planet will hold sway over ignorance and denial. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Thank you.
Burundi police report an army colonel was killed in the capital Wednesday. Word of the attack is just coming to light today. A police spokesman says Colonel Emmanuel Buzubona and his driver died when gunmen fired at their motorcycles as they rode through the streets of Bujumbura. Also, the UN Refugee Agency has updated the number of people who fled Burundi in the past year due to ongoing violence. It says about 260,000 have sought safety in neighboring countries. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiye Swuhib in Washington. Twenty past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Last December in Paris, nations finally agreed on a deal to address climate change. Today in New York, they've began signing it. And today is Earth Day, a day to raise awareness about environmental issues affecting the planet. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. More than 180,000 migrants have arrived in Europe by sea so far this year, landing in Italy, Greece, Cyprus, and Spain. The International Organization for Migration also says more than 1,200 have died making the journey. This includes the nearly 500 believed to have drowned earlier this month off the coast of Libya. Nearly 240 migrants that were rescued on the Mediterranean April 16th arrived today at the Sicilian port of Agosto. The IOM says in recent days there's been a small increase in the number of migrants and refugees arriving in Greece by sea. For the past 2 weeks, daily arrivals had dropped to 100. This was due in large from the agreement signed between the European Union and Turkey. However, since Saturday, daily arrivals in Greece have risen to 150. In related news, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg met today with Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras. The Associated Press reports that Stoltenberg said NATO was trying to address the root causes of the migrant crisis, namely violent extremism in the Middle East and North Africa. Many analysts and policymakers say underdevelopment and political repression can provide a breeding ground for terrorism. That belief is often at the center of Western governments' efforts to end corruption and encourage fair elections and good governance. Keith Ellison, the first Muslim to be elected to the U.S. Congress, agrees there is a link between authoritarian rulers and radicalism. Reporter Mohammed El-Shenawi spoke with him at the annual conference of the Center for Study of Islam and Democracy in Washington. Ellison was the keynote speaker. He asked the congressman about the origins of violent extremists, including Islamic State, Boko Haram, and other groups.
I'd say it has a lot of causes, but I do think dictatorship and authoritarianism is one cause. And I think so because if people want to impact the shape and the direction of their society, sometimes they're simply not allowed to do that because people in authority will interpret anything that's not in compliance with their view as opposition and subversion, and then we'll use the operations of the police and the military to squash that dissent. And when that happens, a lot of people don't submit, they rebel. And when people rebel, that means that sometimes it's not always in a good direction. It's not always in a healthy direction. And sometimes people rebel in an unproductive way. So the authoritarianism can lead to extremism. It doesn't always do that. So, like, for example, in the United States, the authoritarianism against African Americans gave us Martin Luther King. And the authoritarianism in South Africa led to Nelson Mandela, who did use violence at certain points.
Yeah.
And the authoritarianism in India gave us Gandhi. But the authoritarianism in Egypt, for example, gave us Sayyid Qutb, who wrote Milestones, who was the ideological progenitor of Al-Qaeda and therefore Daesh. So responding, the responses to authoritarianism sometimes are healthy, sometimes are not, but they always lead to rebellion. And so I think the real thing is to say protest isn't a threat. Peaceful protest is good for society. One sign of a healthy society is if people are allowed to protest. It's okay to question the direction of the leader, and the leader should have good answers for the direction that they're going to pursue. And so any leader that says, I don't have to answer any questions, and if you ask me a question, I'm going to throw you in jail or kill you, that's a bad leader. That's an authoritarian leader.
The United States used to favor stability in the Middle East over democracy. Do you think the U.S. changed that policy and is doing enough to back democracy in the Middle East?
You know, in my opinion, this is another difficult and complicated question, and clearly a sign that you're a good interviewer. But I think that the Obama administration wants to support democracy over stability, but it's going to take a long time, right? We've been favoring stability over democracy so long that in order to make a quick turn, there's going to be a period of disruption, right? And there's going to be a lot of forces that are going to tell us, no, stick with the status quo. Because, of course, there are some people in the Middle East who like the United States favoring stability over democracy,
right?
Because they're in charge, they're in control. So they don't want democracy, because democracy would mean that the society will be self-determining. And they don't want that because they benefit from the status quo. And so it's going to be a bumpy ride for a while. But I think that in the long run, and I mean like over the next 7 to 10 years, it is best for us to stick with democracy, and it is best with us to hold on to a position of integrity, because eventually the people's voice is going to be heard. I would have cut off all aid to Egypt after the coup. I would have done that. I'm no friend of the Muslim Brotherhood. I'm no enemy of the military in Egypt. But I would have done that because I'd have said, look, the antidote for what you don't like about Morsi is to vote him out of office. How great it would be to just vote him out. That'd have been awesome. I don't care about whether I don't care who the Egyptians have as their president. That's the Egyptians' business. But the process is something I think the whole world should care about. So that's sort of my thought. It's a rough road between where we are now to supporting democracy on a consistent basis, because there are impediments to that, but we've got to start or we'll never finish.
That was U.S. Congressman Keith Ellison. He spoke with VOA reporter Mohammed El-Chinawi. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
VOA Africa is there.
VOA.
On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
With your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.